Greetings. Welcome to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you live from Campbell Hall on the campus of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign this lovely Sunday, September 10, 2006. We have a wonderful show for you today. There's been a lot of talk on this show and, of course, in the news for quite some time about the war in Iraq. Today we're going to have a filmmaker discussing his brand new film, exposing the degree of corruption and war profiteering in Iraq, and truly a hair-raising film. Join us today with Robert Greenwald live on the phone from Los Angeles discussing Iraq for Sale. But first, let's go to Media Minutes.
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news relating to the intersection of media and democracy. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Kimberly Cronick.
Congress is now back in session, and the Senate has yet to schedule a vote on major reforms to telecommunications law. The pending legislation does not include any meaningful provision for protecting the principle of network neutrality online, even though more than a million people have signed a petition sponsored by the SaveTheInternet.com coalition asking that Congress preserve internet freedom. The grassroots movement for net neutrality drove home that point the week before Congress reconvened by holding petition drops at senators' offices in more than two dozen cities around the country, like New York.
Unless we fight for internet neutrality, the information superhighway will become a big bucks boulevard for megacorporations, where discrimination rules and millions of people who need the internet to communicate and do business will be left behind.
Boston.
How are we going to have a marketplace of ideas if the marketplace of ideas is for sale to the highest bidder?
Detroit.
We don't want to regulate the internet. The problem is that cable companies and phone companies want to actually rig it.
Des Moines, Iowa.
As a student, I want to have equal access to every source of information.
Minneapolis, Minnesota.
I think the internet is just a fabulous thing. It promotes democracy and just, you know, level exchange of information and ideas. And I think it would be a tremendous tragedy if during my lifetime I saw it both come into being and then disintegrate.
And Honolulu.
I'm a 71-year-old who wants to communicate with his children and grandchildren, who wants to be able to go online and not have my telephone company or cable company tell me what websites I can see, what time I go on, and what I have to pay.
In just these six cities, petitions with some 120,000 signatures were represented. The petition drops convinced at least four senators to go on record in support of network neutrality, bringing the number of senators in favor of internet freedom up to 26 as of September 7th. 14 senators are on record as backing major phone and cable companies' plans to create a tiered internet. Four are classified as waffling, while the rest have yet to take any position on the issue.
As for the phone and cable companies, their high-priced lobbying effort against the preservation of internet freedom continues apace in Washington, D.C. This includes the formation of new AstroTurf front groups, the latest of which is the American Consumer Institute. What the group does not disclose is that its founder used to be the chief economist for Bell Atlantic, now named Verizon, and still works on the side as a consultant to the telecom industry. With regard to more traditional forms of largesse, phone and cable companies are being quite generous with campaign donations this year. Several million dollars have been funneled into campaign coffers, with about two-thirds of it going toward Republican incumbents. As for the sponsor of the Senate's telecom legislation, Ted Stevens of Alaska, he's pocketed tens of thousands of dollars in telco campaign contributions, even though he's not up for re-election until 2008. Stevens was also recently outed as the senator who invoked his prerogative to indefinitely delay the consideration of a bill designed to cut back on the practice of adding pork barrel spending projects to unrelated legislation. A former member of his staff was paid more than $250,000 in the first 6 months of this year by phone and cable companies to help lobby for passage of Stevens' telecom legislation. Meanwhile, other government agencies with theoretical oversight over online access continue to downplay the threat of data discrimination. The Federal Communications Commission has already declared its disinterest in net neutrality, and just recently, the chair of the Federal Trade Commission, the primary agency charged with policing phone and cable companies for anti-competitive behavior, announced the creation of a symbolic task force to further explore the issue, though it was couched in talking points that could have come straight from the mouth of a telecom lobbyist. Congress's fall session is only scheduled to last until October 7th. However, it may adjourn early so as to give incumbents more time to campaign before the November 7th elections.
And now, here's a Media Minutes Fast Fact. The automation of journalism is alive and well, and it's happening first in the world of business news. Thomson Financial, a provider of investment news, has unveiled a process by which it uses computers to parse corporate press releases and turn them around into stories which can run in print or online. Thomson brags that it can churn out computer-generated copy in as little as 0.3 seconds from the time the company releases its information and has been doing so since March. However, they are not the only ones engaged in automatic journalism. The Reuters news service admits it uses computers to write some of its business news, but won't say how much. You've been listening to Media Minutes, a joint production of the Illinois Initiative for Media Policy Research at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization dedicated to media democracy. For more information, visit our website at freepress.net.
Greetings. Welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you at WILL AM 580 from beautiful Urbana, Illinois, on the campus of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Today, we have a terrific show for you with a live guest calling us in from California. Robert Greenwald, producer, director, and political activist, is our guest today. He's produced countless films in fictional genre and more recently as political documentaries, best known perhaps for Walmart, The High Cost of Low Price, which came out in 2005, Outfoxed, Rupert Murdoch's War on Journalism, 2004, and Uncovered, the Iraq War in 2003. Greenwald has a brand new film that we're going to be talking about today, Iraq for Sale, The War Profiteers. But before I bring Robert onto the line, I should also add that before becoming a political documentarian, Robert Greenwald had an extraordinary career as a film director and producer in Hollywood, garnering 25 Emmy nominations, 4 Cable Ace Award nominations, 2 Golden Globes, the Peabody Award, the Robert Wood Johnson Award, and 8 Awards of Excellence from the Film Advisory Board. And he was awarded the 2002 Producer of the Year Award by the American Film Institute. Well, Robert Greenwald, welcome to Media Matters.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
You've been a guest for each of your last few films. We've had the privilege of having you on the air to discuss them. And even before I saw the new film, Iraq for Sale, The War Profiteers, which I had the privilege of watching this weekend, I guess before the release, I was thinking of the famous quote of Franklin Delano Roosevelt from 1940 on the eve of America's entry in World War II. And FDR said, "I don't want to see a single war millionaire created in the United States as a result of this world disaster." And that thought was with me throughout the entirety of watching Iraq for Sale, The War Profiteers. What motivated you to make this film? What was your thinking behind it?
Well, I actually wasn't ready to do another film because we just finished a Walmart film and we were a small group and overextended, and we were sort of thrilled with the response, but figuring we'd take some time to get our act together to do some fundraising. And I was talking to Bob Borsage from the Campaign for America's Future, and he said, "You know, there's one issue that nobody's doing, and if you could get it," this was in January, by the way.
He said, January of this year.
Yeah. He said, "If you could get it done and out by the fall," he said, "I think there would be a chance to impact the election because it's not being discussed. It should be discussed, and if you have it in September, it'll be forced into the debate around issues." So I said, "Oh, damn it, you're right."
Mm-hmm.
Just because we were tired and all. And then, right in the sense that it hadn't been touched. What I thought I would do would be a film with essentially facts and statistics. But as I got into the material, I discovered these were these wrenching, gut-pulling personal stories of death and destruction. Because what happens with large corporations, by their nature, they are focused on making money and cutting corners. And when you put them into a war situation, they make money, they cut corners, and people's husbands and fathers and best friends die.
Yeah, having seen the film, my initial thought when I heard about the film was it would just chronicle the corruption of firms that sort of gouge the taxpayers and make a lot of money while others suffer. But the story does go way beyond that, to the quality of life for the troops, for the quality of, not just life, quality of their ability to be soldiers effectively and to survive in Iraq. And even what was striking to me and I was unaware of was the role of these contractors, these firms on large contracts participating in something like the Abu Ghraib prison interrogations.
Yes, when we began the research and soon into it, one of my colleagues came across that, and I said, wait a minute. And this is where, by the way, it's very interesting how powerful film is. I said, wait a minute, that can't be true. I would have read about it. And he said, go back and look at the articles. When you go back and look at some of the news articles, they do mention it, but it's a line or it's two lines or it's three lines. And its impact is not nearly the same as when we have on camera interrogators who work for private corporations making a profit, telling us they were at Abu Ghraib and they were paid to do what they were doing, which was scandalous. And so I was completely unaware of that. I was unaware of the fact that this corporation, Titan, provides huge number of the translators all across Iraq, that they're ill-trained, and that, again, some of the dangers to the troops are coming back to haunt us because translators get hired who haven't been properly trained or haven't been properly vetted and have an axe to grind, and wrong information gets passed on. But at its core, it raises the issue of profitization of a war, right? I mean, do you allow that very idea to be introduced? And how has it happened without any real debate about it? That, to me, is just scandalous.
Now, Robert Greenwald, in the past, I mean, is this something new, or is this how our wars were conducted in Vietnam, Korea? I take it wasn't that way in World War II, or else FDR would have been, you know, swallowing his words.
Well, there's been outsourcing of limited function, and it has grown, even in the Revolutionary War, apparently. There was a little, I think there was a private contractor who provided some food. But what we've had in the Iraq War, for both ideological reasons and also because of these guys getting caught with their pants down and not having nearly enough men and women, is an enormous jump forward in terms of billions of dollars and the roles. So what you have, where maybe in the past somebody would provide food, let's say, for a troop or a cleaning service, well, now you have men and women worked from the military working right next to a contractor who's getting 3 to 4 times the money they're getting for exactly the same job. And in fact, if you go to our website, iraqforsale.org, we just put up a whole clip of, which is not in the movie, of this one soldier, David Mann, who was in a communication, I mean, a little bit of it's in, but not the full thing. He was in a division over there that was highly trained in communications. What happens, and this, I really, my jaw dropped when I heard this story. I mean, I'm laughing, but it's not funny. It's just so scandalous in terms of corporate behavior. His whole unit's over there, highly trained, have the equipment, working communications. Halliburton comes over, and just like it was a corporate takeover, they tell his unit, you can't do this anymore. The unit has to stop what they're doing, train the non-trained Halliburton workers, give them the equipment, and then sit around watching the Halliburton workers do what they in the Army had been trained and had been doing.
And probably not doing it anywhere near as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the striking things, Robert Greenwald, about the new film, Iraq for Sale, The War Profiteers, is the much greater expense that comes about as they privatize what were once normal military functions that military personnel did. They become much more expensive, and they're done with much less accountability to make sure the job gets done properly.
Yeah, the original argument, a bill of goods, if you will, was that it was cheaper, and possibly in limited short periods of time, certain functions may be cheaper. But there's no question now, given that there's no accountability and that it's going on, that it's much more expensive. And what we're having is subcontracting to subcontracting to subcontracting. So you literally, and again, we have stories of this in the film, you might have, Halliburton might get the contract. Then they subcontract it to somebody who takes a piece. Then that company subtracts it to a second and a third. And finally, some third country national is getting $4 a day with four big corporations kind of on his back, if you will, taking large pieces of that contract.
Our guest today on Media Matters is Robert Greenwald, the noted film director and producer who has a brand new film, A Rock for Sale, The War Profiteers, coming out right away in the very near future. You can learn about the film and about Robert Greenwald at the website, rockforsale.org, or at robertgreenwald.org. Go to either one. Robert, when is the film coming for general release?
Well, because we do alternative distribution, there is a series of dates. It's opened in New York and Los Angeles and Houston in movie theaters.
Mm-hmm.
But you can order right now on the website, and you'll be receiving it in the next, by September 20th or 25th, so you should order it now. And then in October, we're going to have house parties. And, of course, the crucial thing with all the films is, as you, Bob, know and have supported us in very important ways, is that they're a tool. And the films are only successful if the listeners not just get a copy, but then show it to a friend, to a school, to a church, someplace. It's a way that I've discovered for myself and for the hundreds of thousands of people now who buy them and use them, it's a way to be active and to do something other than merely write a check. I mean, it's really a way to participate in democracy.
If listeners want to call in and speak with Robert Greenwald, the phone number here at Media Matters, 333-9455, our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. And I imagine, Robert, when I first met you, which was about 4 years ago, and you were just getting started in all this. It was before you had done your first Iraq film. And you'd, I think, produced the film in the 2000 presidential election at that point. Since then, you've really thrown yourself into this, and now you're producing what seems like almost a film a year. You're directing, and you've built up this distribution network. Can you talk a little bit more about what you're building over there and what your vision is?
Yeah, well, what I've discovered, and I sort of backed into it, is this alternative distribution that we at Brave New Films do is really the most effective way to reach people with film. And let me just take a minute to say, you know, the traditional thing, people come up to me, and it literally happened in New York the other night. We had this wonderful screening, and people came up, and this guy said, oh, you've got to get it into 1,000 movie theaters. And I said, no, we're going to do much better. We're going to get it into 5,000 or 6,000 schools, homes, and churches. And he says, well, why is that better? And I said, well, think about it for a minute. I mean, I love going to the movies. I love buying my popcorn and paying too much for the Diet Coke, you know, and sitting there. But who is going to spend $7, $8, $9, or $10 to see a documentary on a subject where either they don't care, they don't know very much, or they're strongly in disagreement with the point of view? Zero. It's even hard to get people to watch it when it's on television if they're not interested or they disagree. But with the alternative distribution, again, you go to everyone has a relative they fight with. Everyone has some friend they disagree with, or they're at school or church or, you know, pizza player parlors, bowling alleys, every place you can reach out with these films. So we're now passionately committed to alternative distribution as a way, essentially, it's the great one-line lesson from the Internet, which is peer-to-peer. And the film serves peer-to-peer because people get them and then go out and use them in different ways. So what we're setting up is a system of, really, it's called Brave New Theaters. Anybody with a film, not one that we've made, can go on, put the film up there, and use our software to arrange screenings and house parties and helping organize an alternative way of making sure that your movie is seen. So that's kind of step one of what we want to do for the future.
Robert, have many people taken advantage of this opportunity with Brave New Films, Brave New Theater?
It's just started, and a few have already, and of course we haven't had any time to focus on it. And I hope after Iraq for Sale is launched that we'll be able to raise some funds and hire a person or two to help spread the word and to help guide filmmakers through the process. Although it's pretty simple, Jim Gilliam, who created it, who's one of the Brave New Films partners, really did, quite a brilliant job. So I think we've had about 6, 7, 8 movies up already. But you don't even have to make the movie. You know, let's say, Bob, you want to show Inconvenient Truth, the Al Gore movie. It's on mm-hmm. DVD, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to have a screening, and you want it on the campus. You can go on. You put it. You buy your copy, right, regular way. But now you go on to Brave New Theaters, and you say on, October 15th, I'm having it in this lecture hall and I want 200 people to sign up. Or I want to have it in my home, and I want 5 people to sign up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't have to be the maker of the film. It can also be an organizing tool for people who just want simple software to help spread the word.
Robert Greenwald, our guest today on Media Matters. The phone number here, 333-9455, toll-free number 1-800-222-9455. Robert Greenwald, filmmaker, producer, and director of the brand-new film, Iraq for Sale, The War Profiteers. I've seen your entire corpus of documentaries, Robert, and I think this one, they're all good, but this one really was striking. I mean, it was really terribly moving. And you were talking before about one of the problems of putting films like this in theaters is you might have an audience that strongly disagrees with the content or the political argument. This film, unlike any almost any political documentary I've seen, and certainly any of your earlier films, I can't imagine what the argument is against this one. I mean, to me, this film really is dealing so directly with corruption in a way that is antithetical to anyone's values. I really don't know who's going to argue with you on this and say, no, this is a really good system. Are there people who say you're getting it wrong, that what the Halliburtons of the world are doing over there making lots of money is benefiting us?
Well, I think they'll find some euphemism. The intent was exactly what you said. I wanted, and I carefully did not take a position on the war, by the way, because I wanted this tent to be as large as possible. And I wanted even people who were in favor of the war, and we have some in the movie, like Ralph Peters, the lieutenant colonel, I wanted them to be able to say and participate, saying, no matter what you think of the war or who you voted for, this is totally wrong and has to be stopped. Now, the reason for that, of course, is the great line, first you divide, then you conquer, which we used a bit in Walmart, too, to try to make the widest possible tent and bring people in where we could find areas of agreement. I think Chomsky calls it chipping away at the weak spots.
Mm-hmm.
No. And this is certainly one. And of course, what I want to raise is the issue of war profiteering. I think it's a potent, frankly, electoral issue because there have been 4 votes on it. And people can go to the website and see how did their senator vote?
Is it both in the House and Senate or all in the Senate?
Both. There have been 3 votes in the Senate and 1 in the House.
Okay.
Waxman bill in the House, you know, it was basically a simple thing. Anybody who had, I think it was anybody who had been caught with, he had some nice euphemism, but basically stealing over $100 million, we wouldn't do business with anymore, which would have meant Halliburton, and they voted it down. So people can go, and then they can go back to their member of their House and say, now, the argument that I'm sure they find is always...
Wait, before we go into where can they go to find this information if we wanted to look up our member of the House?
If you go to iraqforsale.org,
okay.
And there's a legislative section, and we've got the information there.
Okay, terrific. Well, go ahead, proceed.
Yeah. I think to answer your, key question, which is what would be the argument against it, is it's genuinely cloaked in a euphemism, which is it's a crisis, it's wartime, we have to move quickly, and, of course, the argument we're going to take away from them big time is we have to support the troops. In fact, the week we're having in October when we're asking people to do house parties is Patriots Against War Profiteering, because I want to take the very patriot word back on this one.
Yeah, one of the striking features of the film is talking about exactly how these firms, and Halliburton, one that gets a lot of attention, but there are many others. To be honest, I didn't heard of a bunch of these companies. They're not, I guess their whole business model is just getting government contracts. They're not going to be in the mall or on advertising on television. And just the effect it does have on the troops on the ground. Could you talk a little bit about what you discovered?
Well, what I discovered, what I had no knowledge of going into this, was several things. That what I had mentioned before, that a member who has either is in the military and is doing it because that's their job, and they're there to do their duty, if you will, right next to them is someone's being paid 3-4 times the same amount. It's devastating, number one. Number two, lots of times the military is now being called upon to guard Halliburton convoys going up and back across the country. So suddenly they're putting their lives at greater danger because of Halliburton traversing Iraq. Number three, a lot of the money, this is a zero-sum game, right? So the more money that goes into the profit. Now, the head of Halliburton last year, between his salary and his stock, made $40 million, David Lazar. That is scandalous. That is just obscene.
And again, so our listeners understand, a company like Halliburton, this is not a company that's selling a product in the marketplace in the United States to consumers. Its entire revenue base is coming from government contracts.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's why the focus here potentially is strongly in terms of a legislative focus, which is there are these companies, Halliburton, Cocky, Titan, Blackwater, which is a private company, all have one primary customer, and that's the U.S. government. So our representatives are supposed to protect our tax dollars and protect our lives. And to the degree they are supporting war profiteering, they are doing neither one. Our tax dollars are going to these crooks, and our lives are less safe because the soldiers are less safe. And Iraqis, I mean, think about it for a minute. They see these multinational companies coming over there with multi-million and billion-dollar contracts, and hospitals aren't getting built, and schools aren't getting built, and water supplies are polluted. And they know that that money, they don't know the specifics, is going to these large, big, monster corporations. That's not good for any of us or anybody around the world except the elite in Halliburton and Cocky and the heads of those companies.
Our guest today on Media Matters, Robert Greenwald, producer and director of the brand-new film, Iraq for Sale, The War Profiteers. You can learn more about this film, where it might be screening nearby, at their website, iraqforsale.org, or also go to robertgreenwald.org. Our phone number here at Media Matters, 333-9455, toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go to the phone lines right now. Line 1, Champaign County, you're on the air with Robert Greenwald.
Hi, thank you. Great stuff you've been doing. I think I've seen 4 of the 5 of the last ones.
Thank you.
I understand you want to sort of kind of steer this one to be sort of not big D Democrat or political per se, but how do you handle, you pointed at this issue that this theory of privatizing and outsourcing was developed a while back, but how do you deal with the idea that it was our great prevaricator, Dick Cheney, who actually in the last days of Bush 1, I guess, wrote up the documents that allowed this Halliburton to then bid for these contracts, and then he gets a job with Halliburton. It seems to me it's just refining the iron triangle of defense spending so that even more of it could be used as a cash cow for the large corporations. I have another point, too, if I could hang on.
Sure, go ahead. Why don't you just give them both?
Oh, okay,
them,
well, the other one is I'm wondering how much you do. You mentioned Blackwater and the more specifically military contractors. There's an author, Isabel Ordonez, who has a piece out about the recruiting in Latin America. Apparently, recently, 1,200 Peruvians, ex-military in Peru, were recruited to go guard the Green Zone in Iraq by a company. I think it's Triple Canopy. I forget which one. But as you say, they have these multiple layers where everybody gets a take on the way up and down. But the idea that the U.S. is recruiting, ex-military from, you know, Fujimoro's government to go over and help guard, and then they apparently get involved in these bait and switch things where they actually don't just guard security, they go out and search and destroy in some cases, and there's been a lot of that going. I just wonder, I know there's so much graft and the hospitals not being built, but I wonder how you spend your time on the actual specifically military contractor part of this. You've mentioned it a fair amount, so I assume that you do, and I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Those are great questions. Robert, before you answer, just to put things in context, give some sense of just the amount in raw dollars we're talking about that they're getting in the hands of these companies, the value of these contracts.
Well, it's actually even hard. We know that we're not getting the full amount, but we're not talking about millions. We're talking about hundreds of millions and billions of dollars to Halliburton, and close to $1 billion now, it looks like, for Blackwater. With Titan, the providing of translators, this is a huge company, is one of their biggest sources of income. And to be clear about, again, what I try to do with the films is deal with systemic issues. Some of these companies are then hired to go to do the New Orleans work. I mean, you talk about a system that is rotten to the core. This is clearly one. So they profit from Iraq, and then they're going and profiting from the tragedy in New Orleans. So, and the sums, unless we rise up and raise hell, are only going to continue. And
let's talk about, the caller asked about Dick Cheney and Halliburton. Halliburton plays a prominent role in the film, and Dick Cheney comes in for some review too. What's your impression of Dick Cheney's role here?
Well, there's no question it was a very critical role in terms of when he was in the government, giving Halliburton the contract and then going and working for them and making tons of money. So I think the caller was referencing my thought that I'm making this as wide as possible. Having said that, we don't shy away from saying this is what Cheney did, and then here is what's going on, some things with Bush where he's not able to answer a question that he's asked on this general subject. But what I wanted to do, and the reason I didn't, for example, the Halliburton section of the film really goes on and, you know, these incredible stories, which I didn't believe when I first heard, $45 for a six-pack of Coke that your tax dollars, everybody listening to, is going towards, so that $100 for sending laundry out. That's the material that I wanted to grab everyone.
It's unbelievable, having seen the film. And I think you do a very nice job of explaining how they get away with this stuff. I mean, it incenses the military people across Iraq, but the way the system is built such there's no penalty for basically squandering resources and way overcharging.
Right. No, exactly. They're rewarded. When we first started this, we were sitting in a meeting, I'll never forget this, one of the really smart young guys who worked with me, and we were talking about a cost-plus contract. And he says, what does it mean? I said, well, it means if, you know, you bid the contract and it's $1,000, you get $1,000 plus built-in profit. There's a pause. Everyone in the room looks around and says, wait a minute. So you mean if we were doing this movie, we would get more profit based on how much we spent, and the more we spent, the more profit we got? I mean, everybody listening, just think about that for a minute. You know, in your work, if your profit was a percentage of what you spent, talk about no inducement to try to limit costs. It's, you know, and then we show in the film putting executives at Halliburton up at 4- and 5-star hotels and all the lavish spending because their contract rewards them for spending our money.
It's absolutely unbelievable in the film, the stuff you've got on the lavishness and the lack of concern of resources. And, you know, you didn't have time to contrast it to the needs for that money in the United States, but you just make the point with how the money's being spent in Iraq. It is absolutely devastating.
Yeah, I think that, so to answer the caller's question, I think we certainly reference Cheney, and we certainly make clear that this is going on big time now, and we have the votes where any effort to rein in Halliburton was voted down. In terms to the other question about the
use of mercenaries and the more military involvement of contractors.
We focus on Blackwater because that's, again, one of the most egregious stories where one can connect the dots, which is the head of Blackwater is a far extreme right-wing Christian fundamentalist, Eric Prince. Between he and his family have given $2.5 million to the Bush administration and Republican candidates. And he has this military company that is getting the contracts that guided Paul Bremer in Iraq. They did work in New Orleans. And four of their men were killed in Fallujah. And there's a lawsuit by the mothers because what did Blackwater do? It cut corners. It shaved off security, which put the lives of those men at risk in Fallujah. And so we look at the mercenaries from that point of view. We don't go into all of the different companies. But again, the soldiers have told us, and somebody else can make this film, which is, we just refer to it a little bit, what do the mercenaries do? They are hired to protect somebody. right? So they're driving down this, and they're now, it looks like, apparently 25,000 of them in Iraq. They're driving up and down the streets. They can shoot anybody to, quote, protect their guy. And there is no, listen to this carefully, no legal recourse. They do not fall under the laws, military laws, the way our servicemen and women do. So literally they could shoot somebody, be sent home, and come back with a new company the next week. And talk about putting our servicemen at risk and making their job of winning hearts and minds virtually impossible.
Yeah, because to an Iraqi on the street, that's just an American shooting at them.
Exactly.
Our guest today, Robert Greenwald, producer and director of the brand new film Iraq for Sale, The War Profiteers. It's just been released. You can learn more about it, how to get your hands on a copy, at iraqforsale.org or www.robertgreenwald.org. Our phone number here at Media Matters, 333-9455, the toll-free number 1-800-222-9455. We do have a couple of phone lines open. 1 week from today, our guest on Media Matters will be U.S. Representative Bernie Sanders, who's been a guest on the show many times. I hope you'll join us then. It should be a good and lively program.
One of the best of the best.
All right. Yeah, there you got it. Robert Greenwald's endorsement. Let's go back to the phone lines now. Line four, beautiful Farina, Illinois, on the line.
Oh, good morning, and a beautiful show. I have a two-part question, and the first is, shouldn't these people, Bush and Cheney, and not only them, but the ones who voted for this stuff, all be impeached? And the second part is, we've seen that they used these militias in Katrina, and so what's to stop them from expanding their use? And they've already done roundups at the RNC convention. What's to stop them from using them here to squash protests now that the NSA... and they're making laws as well to blur the lines between protesting and terrorists.
Well, thank you very much, caller. Robert, if I can sort of jump in just to ask you to talk about one other point as you answer her question. You know, when I'm watching the film, it struck me. I mean, it's so outrageous, this corruption. And I think to anyone, whatever your political viewpoints about the war, whatever one's political philosophy, it's indefensible, this sort of waste and corruption. You have to wonder how come this isn't being held accountable in Congress. I mean, what is going on that this simply, as you said, four times has been voted on and it gets passed through? What is going on in Washington that makes this relationship and this activity so unimpeachable? And how do the just take it from there.
Well, what we found out, which is not a surprise, is that all of the entities we're dealing with are doing two things on a regular basis. They're giving money, they're giving it to candidates, they're giving it to PACs, and they're giving it to lobbyists. So it's not only directly to the candidate, and then they're hiring. And I don't think I truly understood the impact of the revolving door until I did the film, and there's a little graphic at the end of each section of the film kind of showing the revolving door in quick order and the way they're all connected. But by hiring all of these high-level military folks and high-level ex-politicians and high-level politicians' aides, they are creating an insular club in which there is this double whammy of giving money and then having buddies who've been in power. And I said to somebody, I said, now why are high-level military raising even more hell? Because many of the military are just aghast and disgusted and distraught.
Hey, your film is filled with them.
Yeah. And this guy said to me, he said, because they don't want to alienate the contractors, because when they leave, they want the $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 job.
How much of the corruption that you chronicle in the film was, and on the public record before, because you have TV and newspaper clippings in the movie, and how much of it was, how much did you just collect that had already been exposed, and how much new expose did you develop for the film?
Well, most of it was the personal stories, which were new. We filled it out with the news as the kind of anchoring it, and it's a little bit of what I did with Walmart, a approach which I have found to be effective, kind of, if you will, from an argument point of view. You tell a deeply personal story with someone who you trust by their nature and by who they are as a person. Then you back that up with maybe a second or a third person. And then you go to news, the statistics. So it's from the specific to the general, if you will, so that we're able to build the case very clearly. And that's the way we use the news. But the breakthrough material is many of these deeply personal stories, truck drivers, mothers, wives, contractors themselves, soldiers, helping us understand the impact and also helping reframe it in a way, because I think the other misconception I had going into this was that war profiteering was essentially another white-collar crime that was basically victimless. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not the case. It's definitely, you know, people are dying. It's not, it's far worse than I had realized.
When your research for the film and what you did is putting the film together and producing it and directing it, how would you characterize the U.S. news media coverage of this scandal over the past 3 or 4 years? In preparation for this show, I just did some work on the net. And, you know, as early as 2002 and 2003, I found some coverage of the story. So it's not like it's something that people didn't know about from the very beginning. Do you think the press coverage in general by the U.S. news media has done a good job of getting to the bottom of the story and bringing it to the attention of the American people?
Well, there have been two journalists who have been particularly good. T. Christian Miller, who writes for the L.A. Times, by the way, you ought to have him on. He has a new book out called Blood Money, and it's just brilliant. And his research is extraordinary. I don't agree with every conclusion of it, but he's done a great job in the L.A. Times and in his book.
Mm-hmm.
And I think his glance in the New York Times has actually done quite a good piece. I think that the weakness has been in a lot of the TV reporting, because mm-hmm. this is a story where you want people, but that's changing. I mean, ABC last week did 2 minutes on the film and the issue of war profiteering, and there are more shows coming up from, because they now are calling me from some of the different shows that are dealing with aspects of it. And
has Bill O'Reilly given you a call yet to get you on air to talk about it?
I'm proud to say I'm still blacklisted at the Fox Network. They won't take me on any single show there.
Our guest today on Media Matters, where you are welcome, is Robert Greenwald, filmmaker of the brand new film, A Rock for Sale, The War Profiteers. Just out, you can go to arockforsale.org to learn about it, or go to robertgreenwald.org. If you want to call in, if the question or comment for Robert Greenwald, the phone number 333-9455, toll free, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go back to the phone lines now. Line 2, Champagne, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. You said something right at the beginning of the program today that connected with something from yesterday in my experience that just sort of leads me to my, you know, basic concern, which this show talks about a lot, that the, you know, mainstream journalism just is falling down on the job of connecting the dots. And what I mean by that is that I went to see the 9/11, the Press for Truth, yesterday. It was shown at the Art Theater. And Paul Thomas, who's booked The Terror Timeline, which is largely the material for the documentary, said that, you know, he didn't really do in investigative reporting in the sense of going out and talking to sources so much. He just did a search of practically everything that has been published in the mainstream media, and by that was able to connect the dots and put together, you know, a timeline that in large part contradicts the you know, official story of the Bush administration, even contradicts a lot of what the 9/11 report came out with. And you know, as you said at the beginning, you know, you hadn't, or your other producer or somebody hadn't really seen these stories about the money corruption and that sort of thing. Even though they're there, they're not given a context, and nobody goes and bothers to put the dots together, so that when people start talking about this stuff, you know, you just have to overcome the skepticism of most people, because it's never been put into a context, and it sort of, you know, falls to somebody, a filmmaker who, you know, is not a regular journalist, to do the job of the journalist.
Well, Robert, do you have a comment on that?
Well, I mean, Bob, you know this world better than anybody, since you're the pioneer of going after the media. So I think I will defer to you to respond, other than to say, from my point of view, yes, And they're now our alternatives today. There is alternative media. There is alternative distribution. We can get the films out. We can get them, you know, things on the internet, YouTube. I mean, there's, to me, incredibly exciting alternative possibilities. I'm maybe more optimistic than you may be, Bob, about this stuff.
Well, I'm optimistic when I see your film, when I see it out there getting released. I'm pessimistic when I see the content of your film. But I do want to ask you, before we go back to our phone callers, Robert, about the whole controversy about the ABC film Path to 9/11, because that's sort of close to the work you do. I mean, it's a fictionalized documentary, but it's most clearly based on a historical record and presents itself as the truth. What's your sense of what's going on at ABC, and what's your take on this program?
Well, I don't know. I know some of the players involved at ABC, but I have not talked to anybody specifically about it. From what I've read, I believe, and this is why our Raising Hell is so important, I believe a decision was made at some level, not in a conspiracy sense, but purely in a business sense, which was they wanted to protect themselves against the right wing, and therefore they went out and for sure showed it to right wing bloggers and conservative bloggers. Which was a fatal error that we can never let them repeat again, which is why I think the folks that are doing such a great job have brought this issue in a week from nowhere to the front of the papers.
You know, and I should interject, for there might be some listeners who are not familiar with what I asked you about. ABC will be airing a documentary on Monday, a long documentary on the path to 9/11, which creates fictional, it's a true story, it claims to be a true story, but with some creative license, but actually using real characters, President Clinton, Madeleine Albright, Sandy Berger, has them do things they didn't do, say things they didn't do, which are in fact quite damaging to them, but never actually took place. So I'll let you go on, Robert.
Exactly, and they then took that film and showed it. It's going to be, I think it's on tonight and tomorrow, but don't watch it. They then took it and showed it to conservative and right-wing bloggers. So that was one part of a strategy on their part, which, again, I don't believe was driven by any individual people's politics. It was driven by a perception that often happens in corporations of power balance, and we have to even that power balance. The part that I truly cannot comprehend is they hired public right-wing writer and a writer-producer and a publicly right-wing director. And that, to me, is, I just don't comprehend. It's just stupid.
Our guest today, Robert Greenwald, you're listening to Media Matters. We've got about 10 minutes left if you'd like to call in at 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. Robert Greenwald will take a chance to see it, listeners. Let's go back to the phone lines right now. Line 4, again, Farina. You're dominating the lines again today, Farina. You're on the air with Robert Greenwald.
Hello. Thank you very much. I don't know... What is the list of capital crimes that this company is actually guilty of or could be associated with? That would be a question. It almost seems like there's a pattern of behavior in the Bush family itself, going back to Prescott Bush with the conviction of Trading with the Enemies Act in World War II, association with the Carlyle Group at the time and right after 9/11. I don't know. You know, what do you do about it? Impeachment, what do you do? And thanks very much.
Sure thing. Well, if I understand the logic of what you were saying earlier, Robert, you're hoping that this will be something people will demand that their representatives act on.
Absolutely. I mean, this issue of war profiteering, and again, yes, Bush is bad, but it's not just Bush. You know, there's lots of folks involved.
Well, there were lots of Democrats who you voted not to question this when the votes came.
In the House, by the way, in the Senate, the Democrats have been great. It's been, I think it's virtually every one of them voted for it, shockingly so. But that the reason for that is the contractors have not been giving them money. By 08, it'll all change because they'll be giving them money too. But I think that this is an opportunity, as you were just saying, Bob, that with the elections coming up, people can get the film, use the film, ask questions of your representative, and even if your representative is good, use it to raise the questions, because I think our job is to, first of all, is partly to keep elected officials' feet to the fire, And secondly, it's to use the film as an organizing tool. Every time the film is shown and there's a discussion for 5 minutes or an hour about profit and what is acceptable behavior, where do we draw the line? What do we want from our elected officials? What are we prepared to allow corporations to do? That's the beginning of organizing. And again, I know people sometimes see the dark days, but if we look back historically, the labor movement, the civil rights movement, the women's movement, and the peace movement were not led by politicians. They all were led by us, and then the politicians followed. And the same thing will happen on these issues.
Let's go back to the phone lines. So we're talking to Robert Greenwald today in Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Greenwald is the producer and director of the new film, A Rock for Sale, The War of Profiteers, which has just come out. Line one, Bloomington, Indiana. You're on the air with Robert Greenwald.
Good afternoon. Robert, I want to revisit the comment you made about connecting the dots. There are many people that are listening to you, people who ordinarily listen to other guests on this radio station that are in such an agitated state, they ask themselves what they can do. In fact, this is a conversation I had yesterday with someone. My suggestion is it a possibility that you could do a film on people who are actively engaged in taking some control over their lives, not necessarily waiting for their politicians or representatives to extract them from this morass that they find themselves in this society?
Well, thank you very much, Colin. Robert, there's a film idea for you.
Thank you. Well, I think I agree with you. It's an important idea, and it's critically important that people know they can take action. They don't need to wait for anybody. And while we're trying to think about fundraising or getting the next film, which after all takes a year, I hope that people will use the movie as a way of walking the walk, not just talking the talk, because here's something you can do. I mean, there's many things you can do, right? But the film, whether it's this one or it's Walmart, whatever it is, are all tools where you can go out and start doing that by getting people together and saying, okay, we've seen this. Now, what group do we want to join? Or what action are we going to take? Or whose office are we going to organize a sit-in? And, I mean, whatever it is, there's lots to be done.
How big of a crew does it take to make a film like this? And what sort of budget do you have to have?
Well, the crew is a little misleading because we had tremendous numbers of volunteers. By the way, the other thing we do is if you go to iraqforsale.org, people can sign up to be field producers who are volunteers around the country who help us. We had people doing research, people designing posters, people putting out press things to their local newspapers. We probably had, I think it was about 20 maybe full-time people, and full-time in this case was 7 days.
Yeah, 24/7.
Yeah, really long, tough hours. And the budget on this movie was $800,000, which was not a lot given the amount of work and the amount of time. And just briefly, for those of you who aren't on our mailing list, I hope you'll go and sign up for that. But we needed to raise the money, and as Bob knows, we were running out of time, and we went out with a public appeal, and over 3,000 people contributed $25, $50, and more so that the film was able to get finished and is now out here in September where we want it to be.
Robert, what does it cost to make a high-quality 30-second TV ad for primetime television by comparison?
It's hard to know. It depends on how many people you get to volunteer.
But, for a TV ad?
Yeah.
Just wondering what a corporation, when Chevrolet does a spot.
Oh, they could spend millions.
That's what I'm saying. So you're making this film
for
less than a 30-second ad. Yes. That's what I point.
Yes.
Let's go back to the phone lines. Our guest today is Robert Greenwald. Line 2, San Francisco, you're on the air.
That was an excellent comment from a caller a little while ago about connecting the dots. And Mr. Greenwald, I think was wise to defer to you, Dr. McChesney, about addressing that. I hope we'll hear you speak at length in the future, maybe in some other venue. I've heard you before. You're an excellent speaker. But I called mainly to ask, perhaps, as I contemplate the IRS turning collecting over to private firms, according to David K. Johnston, I would like to ask Mr. Greenwald if in his research he came across anything about Democrats profiting richly by this war. In particular, here in California, we're very aware that the husband of Dianne Feinstein works for URS, which is said to have made about $600 million off of this war. Maybe he would, and they're building a very nice mansion from these rich profits. Maybe he could address this.
Okay, well, thank you very much, caller. You're Californian, Robert. What's the story there?
Actually, I've heard that story from several authoritative people. We did not pursue that story because we needed to keep... I mean, we could have made literally a 10-hour movie here. There was so much enormous material, but I would encourage people in California, I mean, use the Internet, go on, research it, and then post it on Iraq for Sale. If you can find the stuff, we can find the information. The website is quite full. There's a tremendous amount of material, and it's a tool for organizing. It's a tool for research. It's a tool for sharing information.
You know, Robert, if you listen to this show frequently, you would think that in the state of Illinois, Chicago is the largest city with 3 million people. The second largest city is Fryna with 1.8 million people. In fact, Fryna only has 600 people, but we get many callers from there. We're going to go back to Fryna again. Fryna, you're back on the Media Matters.
I forgot my most important point.
Okay.
Howard Zinn was on this program, and he was asked a question about the movie Catch-22, and as a filmmaker, you'd probably be familiar with it. There's a false flag operation in that movie that is based on money. That was the point I forgot to bring up before. And if you could comment about that.
Comment about the Catch-22?
Yeah, I guess the false flag based on money. I missed that.
No. Well, I think I don't remember the movie all that well. I remember the book somewhat. And I think that what Heller did in terms of the absurdity, we're now seeing carried out, sadly, in a tragic and politically critical way, where these large corporations, by their behavior in Iraq, are making millions and billions of dollars. And again, I can say that I feel if people see the movie, I hope they will then be activated to do something, because the movie is a huge flop if you see it and then just forget about it, rather than any one of the 100 things you talk. Somebody talked about connecting the dots. Remember, there's so many things people can do, and you don't need to solve it all by yourself. But if you make that phone call, if you write that letter, if you get involved with that group, that's the beginning of the change.
Robert Greenwell, we've only got about a minute or so left. What's next on the docket for you and for Brave New Films? Are you going to go back to do fictional films again, or is that in your rearview mirror?
Well, I haven't had the time. As you know, Bob, from this work, there's so many battles to fight. After we finish this film, Brave New Films, we're going to focus on some fundraising so that we can hopefully get the Brave New Theaters going, which, you know, with one or two people. We want to create, we started a training program, a diversity-focused training program, so that we can get people of color and all different kinds of folks, not just the sons and daughters of executives, trained in the kinds of films we do. And I hope we're going to be able to have a small guerrilla unit that will be doing rapid response videos, which I'm very excited about.
I want to thank you, Robert Greenwald, for being our guest today on Media Matters. It's been a delight having you. Robert Greenwald, the producer and director of the brand new film, Iraq for Sale, The War Profiteers. Go to iraqforsale.org to learn how you can get a copy, participate in the message the book deals with, and learn more about it. Thanks again, Robert.
My pleasure. Thank you, Bob.
Sure thing.
Thanks for everything.
My name is Bob McChesney. I'm your host of Media Matters. I want to thank Andrea Boyle. I'll be back 1 week from today with U.S. Representative Bernie Sanders. Have a great week.